Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We continue. It's a Monday. Hollings set to join us.
I went to
voicemail though. Yeah, go figure. So, but in the age of modern telecommunications, don't jump on some other instant messaging platform and voila, send him a message. And joining us now is Alex Hollings. Alex, good morning. How are you? Oh, wait a minute.
What's going on with my phone?
You don't know what's going on with your phone?
No, you're actually the second person this week to tell me my phone's just going straight to voicemail. My brother's been trying to reach me too. I don't know. You know, I recently upgraded to a new phone, which means it obviously can't work as well as the old one.
Yeah, you need to get your shit together, man.
Absolutely. I tell you, especially in my line of work, I need people to be able to reach me when they need to reach me, you know?
You know what?
But anyway, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
I don't want to tell you how to live your life, but it's always good when you're in the media business if people can get a hold of you.
That is fair. I'll also say this. Sometimes it's nice in the media business when people can't get a hold of you. Maybe I'll keep this phone around. This is going to be another one for work purposes.
You know what? I think you have to reach a level of success, both in terms of name and monetary, to get to that. Would you say that are you there yet? Would you say that you're?
I'm certainly not there. However, I would argue where I really run into trouble are old sources for stories.
Oh.
That guy I talked to 2 years ago about this one thing now has this crazy crackpot idea that he knows needs to be front page news. And my phone will start blowing up off the hook because somebody says that they know a guy who can get this story out there. You know, that happens more often than you might believe. But no, I'm certainly not famous.
I need... hold on. Hey, hold on. I'll call my boy Hollings.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. He'll get to the bottom of this. You know, I very regularly, you'd be surprised how many people have a great idea for a story that they can't be bothered to write. You know, they're like, this should be news. We'll get somebody else to write it. I know a guy.
And
then my phone rings.
Have you ever got a good story? I'm sure you probably got somebody who says, hey man.
Oh, absolutely.
Have you seen?
Absolutely. You know, my buddy, Luke Ryan, he's another writer on softrock.com, former Army Ranger, awesome, awesome guy. But he and I were having a conversation yesterday about this, and there's a big difference between someone sending something along to you because they think it's interesting, or they think you think it will be interesting, or maybe it goes with a story, and then you have the types of people who give you a story they think needs to be written. There's a big difference between those two things. A lead is huge in my line of work. You know, I love getting a lead. I don't like getting a narrative. You know, when someone calls me because they've got something that, you know, they have a political skew or they have a business that they're representing, you know, they're trying to advance a narrative through me is never helpful. I'm not interested in that. But when someone's found something that's interesting or crazy, I really appreciate that. You know, a lot of the interaction on Twitter that I get are people just sending me things, being like, check this out. Have you seen it? That's awesome. I appreciate it every day. But when somebody's like, hey, man, what you need to write about is how Trump did this, I'm not interested in those stories. If you want to write that story, you can write it. Send it to me, even. I'll give it to my editors. But I don't want to write your narrative, you know?
So I can write a narrative, and then I can go ahead and send it to you, and then you'll give it to your editor?
Honestly, you? Yeah, but a lot of other people probably not.
All right. I was going to say, I'll take up, I might take you up on that one. I'm really pissed and hammering out on my keyboard. I might take you up on that.
Yeah, by all means, man. I mean, I can't make any promises, but, you know. I mean,
that's here we go. Now we're walking it back. Okay, look, I don't submit this shit.
I'm not the editor. I can send it to the editor, but I ultimately don't even have say if he runs my stuff.
I don't submit this shit not to see it above yours, okay? Like.
Well, now we know. Well, now we know why you got into radio instead of writing.
Thank you. Yeah, why I do my own gig. Who's the star of Almarine Radio? I'll give you 8 guesses, and the first 7 don't even count, okay? Figure it out.
They don't even count.
Exactly. Because you know what? Nobody likes me as much as I like me. So there you have it.
That's the best way to be, though, man. I got to tell you, that's the best way to be.
Trust me. Hey, you don't have to tell me, man. I like myself. I've always liked myself. My grandmother called me when I was a little kid. Her nickname for me was Gosh Gia. She's Irish, and that's Gaelic, I guess. And what does that mean, Grandma? Michael, it means one who has a high opinion of himself. What? I was like 4. What's up with that, Grandma? Like coming down off the top rope on me? What the hell?
Yeah, right?
What the hell? And I'm sure...
I'm like the exact opposite. I was in New York City for rent a little bit ago, and somebody brought up going into a sensory deprivation chamber as though that was relaxing. And I was like, I don't even like me a little. I do not want to spend an afternoon alone with me floating in a tank of silence.
Are you kidding?
That sounds like the worst way I could spend an afternoon in my life.
Are you kidding? To me, that's the best. Me with me? Oh, my God. That's thrilling. Like,
oh, man. See, I need a task. I am my best self when I have an objective. That's why when I'm not working at my desk, I'm in the workshop working on a knife, or I'm out in the garage working on the car, or I'm working out or taking care of my kids.
Because you can't be alone. You can't be alone with yourself?
Not at all. No, Whoa. Man. I got to be busy.
Whoa, that's, I'm going to tell you, at some point, that bill's coming due. Okay, I'm just saying.
Yeah, this is a topic for another episode with a therapist.
Exactly. Actually, it's the topic, okay? When we can solve that one, then I think the rest of them are, you know, they fall into place. So
I'm aware of the fact that it's like an unhealthy mental psychosis, but I also would argue that it's, not that I'm any kind of success, but I'm more successful, I think, than I really thought I'd be when I set out to start writing, you know? And I think a lot of it is because I'm always working.
Let's talk about that. So let's talk about your success and the empire you're building. How many years are you into this? How many years are you into this career of yours?
I'm creeping up on, I've written for SoftRep for approaching 2 years, and I was working as a professional writer. I'll call it that for about a year prior. I mean, I've always written. I've always been a writer. Even when I was a little kid, I was that kid in English class who, you know, it would be a 1-page assignment and I would turn in a 5-page paper and my teacher would give it back and say, make it shorter, you know? I've always loved writing. But I really didn't take the turn towards being a professional writer until, I want to say, February of 3 years ago.
What happened?
When my wife left her job to take care of her mom when she was ill, and when her mom passed, you know, my wife wasn't working. I was working in human resources for a defense contractor and hating it.
And
we were like, what the hell, man? You know?
Is there a worse you're trudging in there every day?
Oh, it was the worst, man. It really was. The work that they were doing was important work. I was doing was not. You know? The company itself were building targeting systems for F-16s and a bunch of other important stuff. But I was just listening to people cry every day. And I'm not the guy you want consoling your line workers.
Oh, really?
You know, HR is just not the environment for me. You know, so, it did pay very well. And, you know, we were living well, but we were unhappy. So we literally... We rented 2 of the biggest dumpsters that you can rent. We threw almost everything that we owned in them, packed everything we had left into a truck and drove down to Georgia and, you know, and figured and decided to give this a shot. And here I am, you know, making a living. You know, I'm certainly, I'm not building an empire quite yet, but we're doing well. My wife doesn't have to work. She can take care of the baby. Things are going well. You know, I'm fortunate. I've had a winning lottery ticket here.
So, so the career is you're a full-time writer now for Soft Rep. Do you write for anybody else?
I don't, although you can find my content on other pages within the corporate umbrella that owns Soft Rep, like the loadoutroom.com.
Right.
But Soft Rep is my primary focus.
Got it. All right. And you even got a little sniff of maybe a career in television. So other doors are opening and you're only three years into it. Do you have any advice?
Right, man, isn't that crazy? I'm so fortunate.
You're a hard worker, man. Yeah, you're a hard worker. Do you have any advice? If I turn this into a transition segment, do you have advice for Marines that are transitioning?
I absolutely do. You know, in the Marine Corps, you know, depending on who you ask and who your NCO was when you were coming up, you'll hear two things. Either always be the guy with your hand up or never be the guy with your hand up, right? I recommend, just like I was in the Marine Corps, and I'm the same way now, always be the guy with your hand up. People are always looking for someone who's willing to bust their ass, you know? And when I first got hired at Soft Rep, I was working for another company that my name wasn't even on the content that I was putting out. I'm not even allowed to say the name publicly because of a non-disclosure agreement.
Right.
It's a big website where they don't attribute the writing to authors. You know?
Right.
And, you know, the pay was okay and the job was all right. But I, you know, I wanted my name on my work. And I saw a job listing for something, which was a website I followed already religiously.
Right.
And I figured, what the hell, I'll apply. Why not? And they gave me a chance to write one column a week for 2 weeks. Was kind of my job interview after 4 job interviews. And from there, you know, somebody needed, you know, an extra piece of content on a Thursday. And I said, absolutely, I can put it together. And then a little while later, the boss said, I need a story on this. And I said, hey, I'm your guy. Before you know it, I'm responsible for half the content on the website, you know, 4 months later. And it really all was because I was competent and I was capable and I was willing. And that's what most Marines bring to the table. Be the guy with your hand in the air and opportunities will present themselves.
Wow.
You know? And however, it means a lot of long nights and, you know, if your dream is a 40-hour work week, then writing probably isn't for you.
Well, you know, that's what most Marines think, though. Yeah, I'm going to get out, and I'm going to be like, I'm going to be home every day at 5 o'clock. I don't know that I've ever worked a job where I was home every day at 5 o'clock.
Me neither, man.
Yeah, I don't know that. I don't think that's the way life is, especially if you're interested in being
successful.
If you're interested in being successful, and you're not going to be home at 5. It just doesn't happen.
Exactly. You know? And if you're the type of guy who makes mission, which is the kind of guy I pride myself in being, I'm not going to leave a task incomplete. I'm not going to half-ass anything. If you're that guy, even if you could go home at 5, you never do. You know? And but honestly, I want to add a caveat to that. I think I'm also really lucky. You know, I bust my ass, I really do, but also so much of this, I'm not the best writer out there. You know, I know a ton of guys that are better writers than me that are less employed, I would argue, you know, but I think that part of it was just that I was in the right place at the right time and someone gave me a shot, you know. Being lucky, I can't overstate the value of being lucky. That helps. Work hard and be lucky and you'll be fine. So far, so good for me.
Well, you know? I'll tell you what, I knew a guy who was from a small town in northwest Minnesota. I met him once and, he was a backup goalie at the University of North Dakota on their men's Division I hockey team, went on to start a construction company, and then took his company to Las Vegas, built the Las Vegas Motor Speedway without union labor. I'm sure there's some interesting stories about that.
I'm very familiar with that racetrack, as a matter of fact.
Right. Built the Imperial Hotel, and named Ralph Engelstad, and died a billionaire, and came from very humble beginnings. And he had this saying, you know, echoed it. You know, a lot of people you hear it from, the harder I get, the harder I work, the luckier I get. And so if you're a hard worker.
I didn't know that was from him, but I have heard that before.
That's what he kept saying. Just keep your head down and just keep working and good things tend to happen. You know, one other thing that I tell, and this is kind of a little bit of a down in the weeds thing. Two things I tell people when they transition. One, what do you want to do? My dad told me something I thought was really smart. And that was, do you think when Wayne Gretzky would go out to practice hockey, do you think that was work for him? No. He loved it. Going out, it was like playing for him. It was like playing. So find something that you love, and your work will be a labor of love. You know, and so if your passion's not part of what you do for a living, then your days are going to be long and you're not going to be great because most people will tend not to put in the kind of hours that are required to be great at something that they hate. Now, there's some people that are just maniacs that will, you know, but most people.
I'd agree, but I think for the most part, you're right. You know, when I first got out of the Marine Corps, I was medically separated, so like the timeline was kind of iffy the whole time, right?
Right.
So when the order finally came down on Thursday, hey, you go on terminal leave starting Monday, so you're done. It was a surprise, but not. I knew it was going to come eventually. I didn't know it would come like that, right? So I didn't know what to do, and I had already applied to a bunch of colleges. My plan was to go to school for business. I already finished my associate's over like 5 years in business while I was on active duty. And I was like, well, I'll go get my bachelor's degree in business because that makes sense. At the time, I had already dropped out of like 6 colleges. You know, like, I dropped out of one right after high school. Then I moved to Connecticut when I met my wife. I dropped out of another one. You know, I probably signed up for 3 more while I was on active duty that nice. I ended up not following through on. And so I was really torn because I was like, I want job security. I want to make a good living for my family. And to me, business seemed like the right thing to do, but I didn't want to drop out again, you know? And so I talked to my brother about it, who my brother actually recently just became the general manager of Road Atlanta, speaking of racetracks.
Nice, congratulations.
Very successful guy. Yeah, he's doing awesome things. But he, like me, went to school for a while and didn't finish, you know? And so when I was like, I really want to finish school, he was like, well, then stop thinking about what you should major in and start thinking about what you'd actually finish. And he was totally right. You know, I decided to switch back to communications, which is where my passion lies.
Right.
And I graduated summa cum laude in 2.5 years. You know, after that, I became stupid again. And when I started looking into grad schools, I was like, I need to get my MBA.
Right.
At the time I was working in HR, it seemed like the way to do the corporate progression. You know, I approached promotions in the corporate world the same way I did in the Marine Corps world. I was like, when I look at the people who are in the places I want to be, these are the degrees they have, these are the certifications they've got, and this is what they do. So I'm going to do that. So I enrolled into an MBA program and finished a semester with straight A's and hated every bit of it, just like I hated that awful HR job I was doing during the day and then going to school at night. So I changed majors again. I went back to communications. I quit my job. Finished my master's in communications with a 4.0 GPA, and now here I am doing this. If you care about what you're doing, it's so much easier to get up in the morning. Work is still work. You know, I'm sure there are mornings where your alarm goes off and you're like, oh, fuck. Right? It's still work. It's your job.
Right.
But if you care about what you're doing, it's so much easier to drag your ass into the office and put the time in. You know, and that's what it's all about. Do what you got to do when you got to do it, so that you can enjoy the rest of the time. For me, staying busy in other ways, you know? Maybe for you, it's in a sensory deprivation.
No, and I'll tell you what, this is one more transition tip. Don't write your own resume. People spend all kinds of time writing resumes, and you don't know shit about the resume process. You don't know shit about keywords and cover letters. Go find a professional. If you need one, shoot me an email or a text message here at All Marine Radio. She's a retired master gunnery sergeant, and she's awesome, you know. But you know,
and I can attest to this person as a hiring manager for a long time and my wife as a corporate recruiter. We would look for ways to hire veterans, right? We want to look out for our own. If I see Marine on a resume, I give the resume a second glance. I'll tell you, I will. The problem is that most resumes never actually get seen by a person,
right?
Unless they've already made it through a few filters. You need to know how to write a resume to get your resume into human hands, you know? And a lot of people don't.
No.
So many military resumes come through with not just silly errors, but formatting issues and things like that get your resume thrown out in that first batch because it didn't even qualify for the search filters that we use to sift through them all.
You know? And so, look, you could shorten tap glass by 2 or 3 hours. All right. Eliminate the, hey, don't write your own resume. If you're going to, here's some examples on this DVD. Here you go, boys. Go out in town, find somebody, sit down with them, give them the information that they need, and then work with them. Because if you're interested in federal jobs, there's one track for it. If you're interested in civilian jobs, there's another track for it. Spend the money. First of all, you won't waste hours and hours and hours doing it. All right. And second of all, you will get to the interview. I promise you that. If you work with professional people, you will get to the interviews, and then you could screw it up. But the one thing they do give, one piece of advice they give in TAP, which I think is pretty good, and that is get a new email address, okay? I whack that booty all night is not going to impress, at gmail.com, is not going to impress the HR department of any business, okay? Other than maybe
your goddamn name as your email address. I am not going to send hiring paperwork to any email address that's like Nine Inch Nails Fan 1998. I'm not going to send it to Hottie Boy 69. Use your damn name. You know, throw a period in there. You can have a number after your name if you have a common name. If your name is, you know, Sean Thomas, I'm sure there's a lot of them out there. Sean Thomas 58 is fine.
Right.
No,
what you said.
The type of dude I'm hiring.
The creative use of underscores and periods. Yeah, you can get your name in there. You can figure it out. Okay. You can figure it out.
And email addresses are free. You know.
Yeah.
Like it's not like you're like, oh, I can't afford to get another one. I've got to stick to my sixth grade email address. It's free. Tie it to your phone. It'll come to the same place as the rest of your email. Do it. Use your name. You know. But while we're on that subject, make sure your voicemail outgoing message isn't about you partying.
Hey, what's up? Mac and the Hizzy, hit me up. But yeah, that.
Exactly. You know. I've called so many people for interviews and had them be like, what's up? Hit me up, bro. And for some jobs, that's fine. If I'm hiring a guy on the production line, that's totally cool. But if I'm hiring a PR professional, I really want you to sound polished so that I don't look like an asshole when I bring you to my hire, you know? Like, I've got to justify every hiring decision, and the harder you make for me to justify it, the less likely I'm going to go out and win for you.
That is awesome. No, you know, this is basic advice, but, you know, you sit through those classes, and you're like, rrr. And I remember working on my own resume. I'm a college graduate. Well, I'll do this stuff, you know? And then it was a piece of garbage. It's a piece of garbage, and I saw somebody's resume.
Yeah, you know, because it's not about intelligence. It's formulaic. You know what I mean? It's about knowing the code.
Right, know the code.
It's about knowing
so
the outline.
I saw this resume, and I called a dude, this friend of mine. I said, hey, your resume is awesome, man. Can you? He goes, I didn't write it. I said, what? He said, yeah, it is awesome. I didn't write it. He said, I'll give you a number. Call this person. I said, really? And he said, yeah. Because he, you know, smart guy. I thought, yeah, man, he cracked the code. Look at this thing. He said, yeah, don't do it. Don't do it. That should be the first thing to get said in TAP class. Don't write your own resume. You want to get interviewed? You know? You want to get interviewed? Do this. And then those are the other two bullets. Your email and your voicemail. Change those today.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right. And then you can change them back once you get the job. But when you're out job searching.
Yeah, sure, by all means. I'm not going to call you again.
When you're out job searching. You gotta act right. Email. Hey Mac, I think it's awesome. Your favorite breakfast is peanut M&Ms and Pepsi. That is my straight up go to. If I like, you could take me to a 5-star restaurant, and if they said, hey sir, what would you like for breakfast? Do you have peanut M&Ms and could I get a Pepsi? I'd be like, I'm happy. Mac, ask Alex, what's his go-to breakfast? What's your favorite breakfast, Alex?
This is going to sound crazy, especially for a fitness-oriented guy. I almost never eat during the day. Okay.
Breakfast is the most important meal of the day.
Agreed. My breakfast is usually 3 cups of coffee. The first two I drink like in a stupor with my kid on my lap, and my third one is usually over my first story. And then I don't eat anything until like... probably 5 in the afternoon, barring a protein shake here and there.
Okay, what about, do you dip? Do you dip?
No, I just, I stay highly caffeinated, and typically, you know what I do is I come up to my office every day, I sit down, and I go, all right, I've got 4,000 words to write today, I am not leaving this room, barring bathroom breaks, until I get my work done. And there's no reason why I can't run downstairs to get something to eat. It's just as soon as I get laser focused on the task at hand,
right.
That's all there is to do, you know? And sometimes I'll go out to lunch with my wife or something, but for the most part, man, I have the weirdest eating habits. They're very unhealthy. I would not recommend anybody doing it.
Following them?
But, like, I take in all my calories, like, after dark, which is, like, the opposite of what everyone tells you to do. You know, but it's worked for me so far. I haven't died, but I certainly don't make good decisions. So I guess my go-to breakfast is like 3 cups of coffee and just and hate.
There you go. Yeah. You can see the tea leaves lining up here. Another email. Hey Mac, I'm curious, how many articles does Alex write a week? And I'm sure the amount of time he devotes to each one varies. But if he has to write, say, 10 articles in a week, how does he devote time to that? How does he scope them? Is it simply by words? Because the business of writing seems to be a little bit different than something I would write that's spitting my spleen and I'm venting in the Marine Corps Gazette. So how do you write? If you've got to write as a writer, so you have X number of pieces that you're supposed to contribute to, in your case, SoftRep, How do you map that out? How do you budget time? How do you do it?
You know, there was a lot of guess and check for me early on. You know, at this point, I produce 4 pieces of content a day. I take that back. I have 4 pieces of content per day that goes live, Monday through Friday.
Wow.
In order to hit that 20 pieces of content mark, I work 7 days a week to have 5 days a week worth of work, you know, produced, right? And the way, sometimes it's easy. Sometimes a story will break. And, you know, I've got some background information on it. I have some experience about it. So sometimes the story is something as simple as, you know, last week DARPA unveiled this new, like, wheel that can go from a tank tread to a wheel in 2 seconds or less. And they were, you know, touting this as some huge advancement in mobility. I've had a lot of experience with working on cars. The first thing I saw was 100 points of failure in a wheel, you know, which is like has 0 points of failure currently. So, you know, I jumped on and I wrote an article. I went and found the DARPA researchers that were working on it because it's really easy. You know, people would be surprised to find. It's very easy to find primary sources on a lot of these things, especially government agencies, because they have to. The taxpayers are paying for it. So you go and find the research, dig into it a little bit, do some real reading. Don't just read what CNN already said because they're just summarizing somebody else's summary, right?
Right.
Dig into it a little bit and then offer your own experiences, but do so honestly. You know, make sure you say, well, this is my experience. And sometimes it's as easy as that. I can finish an article, if I'm lucky, in an hour or two some days, you know. Other articles develop very slowly over weeks or months.
Okay, so if you have to bust out that kind of content, there is no time limit? How do you get through all pieces? You just stay up 24 hours a day and write?
I mean, yes. To be honest with you, yes. I mean, there's definitely been, there have been more hectic times that were a lot of lost sleep. And then there's also some times that are really easy where I had a pretty skate week. You know, there are some days where I'll be in my office for 4 hours and some days I'll be up here for 12, you know? But, when a story comes together over a long period of time, when it finally comes time to sit down and write it, those are the ones that take me the longest to write too. Because I'm trying to do justice to all the legwork that led to this. And that's really challenging, you know? The easiest ones to write are the ones where it's like something crazy happened and I've got something to say about it. The hardest ones to write are the ones where it's like, I talked to this guy in May, you know, it took a month for me to finally get. Like, I'm working on a story right now about the Army's got this program called the PALS program, where they effectively, when you go to your recruiter, they have a list of employers, and you can choose an employer off that list, and it guarantees you, this is a recruitment tool, it guarantees you an interview with that employer on the other side, right? Once you get out of the military, when you finish your contract with the Army, you have a guaranteed interview with this company. I think that's a great program.
Wow.
However, they recently partnered. One of the companies they added to it was a private military contractor. I don't want to go too deep because the story is, I'm still working on it. But
okay.
It's a private military contractor that has a reputation for some unsavory things, you know? And so now what we're doing is we're streamlining. Our Army recruiters are recruiting and saying, if you sign up now, we'll give you 4 years worth of Army training, and then you can head straight to this private military contractor that'll do the same job for a lot more money. This company in particular is not particularly reputable, if you ask me. So what we're really doing is we're streamlining the mercenary recruitment process.
That's awesome.
We're offering Army as the college for a mercenary.
That's awesome.
Now, I have buddies that are mercenaries. I don't want to use mercenary as a dirty word. I've got buddies that do this.
It sounded like a dirty word, just so you know.
It does. Mercenary sounds like a dirty word. It's got a negative connotation. You want to say contractor, right? The thing is that contractors and mercenaries do different jobs. You can be a contractor who's a plumber.
Yeah, pour cement.
You know, if you're getting paid to go fight in Crimea, that's different than plumbing.
That's a mercenary.
Now, again, that doesn't mean that's a bad thing, but I think it's important that we as a people think about the fact that part of our Army recruitment process right now is offering people that we'll pay for the training so you can go be a mercenary. And I think it's important that we know that and we think about it. I'm not saying it's a bad thing or a good thing necessarily. But I think it's important that we are cognitive.
Do you think that's something, though? It's kind of an unsavory, it has unsavory connotations that you're going to go be a mercenary.
Some of those unsavory connotations are well deserved, though. Some of these companies aren't very reputable. Some of the things that they do don't reflect well on the United States. This company in particular was implicated in the Panama Papers for setting up shell corporations outside the United States so that they could take contracts outside the purview of the U.S. government.
Awesome.
That opens them up to working for countries that aren't allied to the United States. It opens them up to doing work that the United States would deem illegal. You know, so then when we're recruiting directly from the Army into this company, that gives you, like, this informal support, as though the U.S. Army supports this business because they're funneling their soldiers directly to them, this business that is actively working to circumvent U.S. law. It raises a lot of important questions.
No, you know what, Alex, I mean, you partnered with them, right? You become a partner with them.
Don't get me wrong, to be honest with you, I can see the value in it. I really can. But I think it's important, what's more important to me as a journalist in situations like this is not to make the moral judgment myself. I'm not trying to say I think this is a good thing or a bad thing.
Why not? Are you being a reporter when you're writing it?
More often than not, I call myself a writer, not a reporter. But in instances like this, I try really hard to be a reporter, not even a writer.
All right. Explain to everybody why when you embrace the term reporter, life changes for you.
Now, as a reporter, your job is to convey the facts as they are without your own spin. Now, I try really hard to be unbiased in my work as a writer and as a reporter, but when I'm writing a piece, like an opinion piece, what I'm doing is I'm giving you my opinion, I'm giving you my justification for it, and I'm making it clear to you that this is my position, not the position. That my versus the is a huge differentiation between being a writer and a reporter. It's one of the problems we run into in modern media in general. We need to understand the difference between my position and what's happening out there, the position. So when I write a story like this, I want to relay to you what's happening. I want to tell you what comes into play. I want to tell you what the implications of those are, right? But I don't want to tell you that I think it's a bad thing or I think it's a good thing. Because at that point, I'm not reporting the facts to you. I'm convincing you. I'm writing a persuasive essay, right? Now, as a writer, I can go ahead and write a persuasive essay. I wrote an article last week that did very well called Let's Talk About What Real Men Do. But right in front of it, the word opinion, colon, appears. Because it's important that you know that this is not my recounting of facts. This is a bunch of bullshit Alex thinks. You know? You have to differentiate between the two. Otherwise, you don't have any credibility.
Got it.
people are going to come to you that agree with you for confirmation bias, but that's not the audience I cover.
Okay, I want to talk about that column. Okay, we're going to have to show some like intellectual discipline, which neither one of us is very good at. So I'll challenge you right now by saying that. What we see on TV, right? So when you turn on CNN, the nation's news leader, or you turn on, I don't even know what NBC calls themselves, or MSNBC calls themselves, or you turn on Fox News, right? Fair and balanced, right? You're looking at quote unquote news, but the majority of the people that you see on there, are not reporters. They are news correspondents. They are news
personalities.
There's all these other names that stay away from that word reporter because they're going to both report from the White House and then add commentary to them. So is it important?
And conjecture.
Exactly. So is it important, and this kind of feeds into your, do you think that people understand what they're getting when we quote unquote turn on the news?
Overwhelmingly, no.
Right.
And I think people think they understand overwhelmingly, yes. There was a study, I think it was a Rand Corporation study, just a few months back, where they polled something like 5,000 and change American adults. And they offered them headlines that were, they had 10 headlines, five of which were purely factual headlines, five of which were opinion-oriented headlines. We're talking about like a critical reading test. You got like reading comprehension test you had in school, right? Is this a fact or an opinion? When they offered these 5,000 American adults 10 facts and opinions, only 30% of the time were people able to accurately identify which headlines were fact-based and which headlines were opinion-based.
Only one, what percent of the time?
30. It was something like 33.
Oh, geez.
33% of the time people were able to accurately identify all 10, right? It got worse is the for instance, if an opinion-based headline slanted towards your personal politics, whether Republican or Democrat, there wasn't a big difference between the two parties, but if an opinion represented your personal politics, you were far more likely to call that headline a fact rather than an opinion because you agreed with it. Now, there were some categories of people that did better. People who said that they overwhelmingly didn't trust the media kind of clocked in at like 40 to 50% most of the time, and they were doing the best, as well as people who called themselves very politically savvy, very active politically. They were also in that 40% range. Even those of us who fancy ourselves experts, people who say, I watch the news 3 hours a day, I'm very on top of things, they still did less than half of the time they were able to accurately identify by headline whether something was giving you a fact or an opinion. Now, I think that this is a product of the way our media works, right? We use inflammatory headlines to get people to click on things because clicks are the currency of our day, right? Clickbait is a legitimate enterprise because it pays more money than good content. You can get more people to click on this thing because we say, click on this thing because Pamela Anderson's butthole fell out, than you can because you go, here's a legitimate, objective retelling of what's going on in Syria.
Well, can I offer you a pathetic example of this? In last week, in Marine Corps Times, right, headline, Marine Corps loses its first F-35. You see that and you're like, holy shit, right?
Yeah, you think, oh my God, an F-35 went down.
Here's the story.
It was the first F-35 that had been delivered to them. And they had deemed it not operational. They're not going to fix it.
Yeah, it caught on fire because it had a brake malfunction on the ground, and they deemed it. It's too the cost benefit analysis of the repairs and the modification. The juice isn't worth the squeeze, so they wrote it off. Now that's Marine Corps Times. A clientele.
I'll argue on their behalf. I'll argue on their behalf
because
there is this. There's this delicate balance that you try to take when you have a story that you think is important. That one I'd argue maybe not so much.
Exactly.
But if you have a story that you think is important, you do try to come up with a way to word your headline in a way that'll make someone give a shit. You know, I've worked on them.
You know, I'll tell you what, to me, and I agree with you. It should be tantalizing, okay? But when
it needs to reflect reality
a little bit. I mean, when you read that, I was pissed, right? So one of my headlines last week was Marine Corps Times headlines readers. I'll find it here in a second.
Well, while you look for that, I can give you another example. Last week, somebody took a picture inside the Pentagon press pool during a briefing on Afghanistan, right? Now, we're on track in 2018 to drop more ordnance on Afghanistan than we have in any year prior.
Right.
The war is active and ongoing in Afghanistan.
Right.
The American people overwhelmingly do not give a shit.
Right.
Four journalists showed up to the Pentagon press briefing about Afghanistan. It's a big empty room with four guys sitting in the front row.
Right.
Because they know when you run a headline about Afghanistan, people won't click on it because people are disinterested. You know, so if you're that guy whose beat is Afghanistan, and a lot of these large outlets do work that way. You know, you've got a region of the world or a country or even a part of a country that's your AOR, your area of responsibility, right?
Right.
So if that's your job, if my job is the Afghanistan beat, I know two things. Number one, nobody gives a shit about the stuff I'm writing about. And number two, my job is predicated on my ability to get someone to give a shit about the stuff that I'm writing about. So you end up getting some people, I could, Lord knows, I have like a list of like blacklisted authors, like writers out there on the internet in my head, where I'm like, I never trust anything that they write because everything they write is inflammatory. Because I know that they're on track to trying to be the next Alex Jones. It's a profitable venture.
Oh,
you know,
God.
You can write for reputable news sites and kind of have a bullshit skew and get away with it because of confirmation bias. People like what you write, so you get traffic. It is honestly, this is the biggest problem with media today. It's more profitable to pick a team than it is to be objective. You know, that's why you see Fox News slant right and CNN slant left.
Well, you know, I don't even have any problem with that, Alex, but here's under the first hour, you know, the headline, it goes under the heading of news and commentary, are declining civility in discourse, and Marine Corps Times headline writers are misrepresenting stories for clicks. It's a long headline, but that's the way I do it. And it shouldn't be like that. And I was talking to my daughter last night about, you know, how does the, so, and this will take us into your kind of the commentary piece that we'll talk about. The United States of America is not the shit show, the glorified version of the Jerry Springer show that we see every day on Fox and on CNN and on MSNBC. The vast majority of the people in this country are great people, right? We've elected a black president twice, right? We almost elected a female president. So a lot of the shit that people say divides us is, I would say, it's not like they're not issues in the country, but the people of this country are good people. What we see, though, is driven by one thing, money. What sells?
Yep.
The hottest, the biggest idiots, the most inflammatory shit is what you're going to see. It's not what you maybe what is news that day. It isn't fair and balanced. It is the hottest thing that will deliver the biggest number because we are a profit-oriented organization and we use the news to make money. And that's the way it is. What changes any of that? This civility that
isn't going to sound self-serving.
Yes.
But I have a strong opinion on what changes that. I work for a small independent news outlet,
right?
When I was interviewed, I went through four rounds of interviews. Through none of those interviews was I asked my political slant. Nobody asked me what my personal politics were. Nobody was interested in what my personal politics were. They told me that I have every right to write opinion pieces as long as they're addressed as such. But my bosses at the time, Desiree Hewitt was my managing editor, Jack Murphy, our editor-in-chief, Brandon Webb, the CEO, I spoke to all of them. None of them asked me who I voted for. That's an important distinction to make in a media company. You know? However, that doesn't really matter big picture if the culture within the company still leans one way or the other. You know? I'm sure that not everyone who works at CNN is a card-carrying Democrat. I'm sure that not everyone who works at Fox is a card-carrying Republican. But there's if there's somebody carrying a guide on at the front, people are going to follow that guide on, right? So working for a company like SoftRep, this is what I love about my company, is that if I have a story that does great traffic, I get 100,000 views in a week, my bosses are really happy. You know, they'll be like, hey, Alex, great job, good story. Conversely, I had a story, I want to say maybe a year ago, about Russian expansion through the Arctic. The story itself probably got a couple thousand views. People didn't really read it. People didn't respond to it very well. But Senator Dan Sullivan out of Alaska saw it, or his staff did, and one of them reached out to me and said, hey, we want to let you know we're going to lean on this story that you wrote in this hearing that we're going to have with Paycom. We wanted to tell you that. I watched it on C-SPAN. The guy's going through some of my bullet points almost verbatim. That's awesome. That's a huge deal. The story didn't do particularly well. But when I posted that in our little, we have like a kind of like a digital communications writer's room thing, I posted that. That got me just as much credit and accolade from my management as having a story that does 200,000 views. Because to them, that's important work. It might not necessarily have hit the pulse of the American people just at the time it was published. That's not always easy to predict. But what we were doing mattered. You know, Luke Ryan ran an article earlier this week about a whistleblower at the VA. I recommend reading the story. I won't do it justice. But long story short, in the short time since that story ran, that guy has been reorganized into a role where he's no longer being actively suppressed by his management. And they put him on a board to talk about whistleblowing at the VA. Affecting real change is important. What happens is every once in a while we'll run a story where it shows like a picture of a girl's bared midriff, and that story will do 3 million hits. That kind of carries us over when we run a story that doesn't have as much traffic but has important real-world implications. And every once in a while you get lucky and it's both. It's a huge hit and it has important real-world implications.
Okay, so how does
the fact that my company prizes affecting the world as much as they prize, you know, getting advertising revenue, I think we're not unique. We're not a unique butterfly. There's lots of other sites like us out there. But as they grow, we will do better. I think and I pray and I hope. Or I'll end up back.
When you say do better, you mean in terms of content, because you have to, so they have to grow, they have to grow the pie. And again, it depends who owns you and what their goals are. They have to grow the pie. In terms of revenue, and they want to get bigger and they want to become more successful. And there is a balance between those 3 million stories about the hottest chicks in the DOD and what's going on in the polar ice cap.
I'll be honest with you. If SoftRep's got some competitors out there who either do or don't necessarily publicly, or publicize their, the team that they're on. There are some out there that are kind of in the pocketbook of large political parties and large political campaigns. They are out there, you know. Honestly, that's a faster route, I would argue, probably to commercial success than our current trajectory, which is just trying to be honest, trying to be fair. When we screw up, we admit it and apologize. You know, that type of thing doesn't elicit passion. You know, if I came out and was a hardcore conservative, a lot of hardcore liberals would hate me, but a lot of hardcore conservatives would love me. You know, it's almost better early on to have a small contingent of very vocal support than it is to have a wide contingent of like, meh, that guy's all right. Meh, that guy's all right doesn't get you employed, you know? So there's incentive from the writer level all the way to the corporate level to choose a side and write to it. You know, there's a monetary incentive to it. For some of us, like for me, it's not because I'm like some noble guy. To be honest with you, I genuinely am just a pretty moderate dude. You know, when I'm writing about trying to appeal to both sides of reason when it comes to politics, it's really because that's the way I feel about it. I'm not trying to covet this moderate market that doesn't exist. I'm hoping to grow one. You know, and I think it's out there. I really do. I just don't think that they have a lot of places they can go right now.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what I think.
News outlets are.
I think there's always a market for smart people asking difficult questions and articulate discourse. I think that is an underserviced market, and I think it always wins. It always wins. But getting to a point where you can do that on a consistent basis and not having to write about the hottest chicks in the DOD is
well, you know, and it's tough because some weeks.
But hold on. We got.
There's just not a lot going on.
I agree with you. Let's talk about being a real man. All right. What is tell
near and dear to my heart?
Okay, tell everybody what the headline was, and tell it. And this was an opinion piece. Let's talk about it. What did you have to say?
So the story's called "Let's Talk About What Real Men Do," and you know, I recommend reading it because I'm always more articulate writing than I am talking. But for the most part, it really kind of speaks to what we're talking about here with politics as well as culture. You know, as a loose example. You know, I was in New York City not long ago. New York City is a lot more walking than I'm accustomed to. We walked like 11 miles in one day, just doing route recon for the events of the next day. We were filming a TV show and doing all this crazy stuff. So at the end of it, we were like, well, I'm going to go get some beers, you know. We walked into this pub in New York City, and I want to say it was Manhattan, full of a bunch of rich, snotty people. I'm sweaty. I ordered a Bud Light. One of our buddies who met us there was like, what are you doing? You can't order a Bud Light here. This is an Irish bar. You're a man. Be a man. Order something else. And, I mean, I use some pretty colorful language. I don't give a shit if you think it's manly or not to drink a Bud Light. I'm fucking thirsty. I'm tired. I want a Bud Light. But it speaks to this idea that we've developed about what real men do. Real men drink dark beer with dirt sprinkled in it. And real men are conservatives. And real men love their guns. And real men do this. Real men love their bacon. We have this idea of what real men are built up in our minds that we started outsourcing our decision-making to the idea, to the group collective, to Twitter deciding what hashtag real men do. You know? And politically, this is a great example of letting your party do the decision-making for you. We've become so politicized that things that have nothing to do with the ideologies of our parties have become tied to the parties. Science is not a partisan subject, right? But because some of the personalities related to national media science, and because of some of the arguments we have about some of the science, being a believer in science has become a liberal or a progressive mindset. If you're a conservative, you're a creationist. You don't believe in climate change, all these things. To varying degrees. Not all conservatives are creationists. Not all of them believe in climate change or don't believe in it. On the liberal side, you have the same thing. You've got the Bill Nye and the Neil deGrasse Tyson cloud, and you're not allowed to like them unless you're a Democrat. And you're not allowed to not like. It's crazy that we take something as simple as climate change, and we've politicized it to the point where we're no longer functional in that theater. And that's that type of public outsourced thinking is setting us back in our personal lives, and it's setting us back in our national level politics. And the whole point of that piece was really encouraging you to stop choosing things based on which team they fall under. Real men or not real men. Republican or Democrat. You're a fascist or a communist. Stop using those labels to choose your beliefs and instead objectively look at them and decide which ones make the most sense to you. For me, I think libertarianism's got a lot of awesome tenets. I think that their foreign policy tends to be isolationist and naive, right? So I want some of that libertarian stuff. Like, you know, sure, make pot legal. I don't care. Anybody can get married. Sure, that's awesome, right? The Republicans, they want to strengthen defense, but they have a lot of social ideas that I'm not totally on board with. So I'm going to take some of those defense ideas that Republicans have. Democrats have some social ideas I'm kind of cool with and some I'm really not cool with. So I'm going to take the ones that I like, and I'm going to support those endeavors, even though they don't fall within the confines of my traditionally conservative mindset. You know, the same way I can go to a bar and order a Bud Light, even though I know I should get a Guinness here. Because I don't give a shit if you think this isn't manly enough for me. And I don't give a shit if you think that I'm not conservative enough for the party. What I give a shit about is what I can go to sleep with at night, who I think I ought to be. And we really need to pursue that as an ideology in our personal lives, in our political lives, in our social lives. And right now, overwhelmingly, we're not. You know, and that's the basic crux of it.
All right, let me give you a couple thoughts, and I want you to react to them. I think I'm a relatively well-reasoned human being. I'm a conservative by nature. I had I'll talk about the issue of abortion because it's going to be an issue in our country. my father-in-law, who passed away, I don't know, 10 years ago, I think, he was a doctor. And we were talking about abortion one night after dinner. You know, I mean, it was like all the kids had left the table, and he loved that post. You know, he had 8 kids, huge dinner table. You know, most everybody would leave, but there, you know, he and myself and a couple of other, we'd sit around the table and talk politics and issues and things like that. He said, you know, what's interesting for a physician when you hear this, when does life occur and all of that, he says, that's you guys talking about what you believe to be science, right? When you're a doctor, you know what you did. There's no mistaking it, okay? And he said, what I don't understand is I don't know how somebody goes in and does that every day. I don't know how they live with it, you know? And so he said, so we're talking about, you know, and he's talking about, you know, the whole process of what an abortion is and being the doctor that does it. And he said, I don't know how you could go into work every day to do that. He said, but this is what I struggle with. I don't know. And he's Catholic, right? And he says, but I don't know that it's the state's job to tell a woman what she can do with her body. I know what I believe morally and ethically. How does that happen legally, right? And is that the state?
You know, that kind of critical thinking is, that's what real men do, in my opinion. That position where I know what I think about this, I know what I believe,
right,
but I'm also willing to acknowledge that maybe there's a limit to my authority on the subject. You know, we don't do that right now. When it comes to politics, I'm right and you're wrong. That mindset where
we won't even take a look at. I won't even take a look at your premises, you know, and kind of. For instance, and so I'm a conservative, and I would tell you that his position makes sense to me, and it's always made sense to me in terms of, you know, how you reconcile it, you know. And here's my position on immigration. I need President McNamara. I need a wall, okay? Because the wall triggers a series of dominoes, okay? I'm going to deal with the people in this country one time. I'm not going to do it a second time. I'm not going to do it every 5 years, okay? It's going to happen one time, and we're going to secure our southern border, or at least increase our security, and then after we do that, or simultaneously with doing that, I'll be okay with that, is the Dreamers are going to get a pathway to citizenship, okay? Now, all you conservatives, hold on to your hats, okay? Their parents, who came here illegally, who have clean criminal records, can apply for legal status in the country. They will plead guilty to a felony. They will be put on probation for 10 years. And if they complete that successfully, they will have a McNamara Act legal status. You can't vote. But you're in this country legally, and other than voting, you can have all other rights thereunto pertaining. Now, people will scream and go, that's amnesty, the first thing they did when they violated. Look, the nation needs to get beyond this, okay? In order to get beyond it, we we're not doing it again. We have to have better security. I need that component to this, and then we're going to deal with this. And then guess what? We're going to be on to other great things in terms of how we make the country better. Right after we deal with this, because again, by and large, 90% of those people are hardworking, tax-paying people that live in this country. So, to me, when you begin to say have an open discussion about the difficult issues that confront our country, people are going to go, "Wow!" And you're a conservative? Yeah, I'm a conservative. And who amongst us, other than Steve Bannon? And what's Horseface's name? Ann Coulter? Think that, yeah. Those 10 million people, they'll self-deport. Yeah, they will. They'll self-deport. Get out of my face, okay?
And I have a unique perspective on this from twofold. One, being the grandson of a farmer. The reason why I think a wall isn't the most cost-effective form of security is because I know 90% of his job was fixing fence. You know, when you've got a whole lot of wall or a whole lot of fence, maintenance on it becomes a huge endeavor. I think security does need to go up. I'm not convinced on a wall. But what I like about what you're saying here, and this is with guys in the Marine Corps who joined the Marine Corps as a pathway to citizenship, it is currently really, really tough and expensive to do it the right way. You know, if you have a fake PhD from India, it's pretty easy to immigrate. You know, my wife, when she was a recruiter, she was primarily in tech and pharmaceutical industries, and most of the time she was recruiting for PhD-level employment, right? It's really difficult. If you have a PhD in the United States, it's tough for you to compete against someone who got their PhD in India because they will work for significantly less. Guys with PhDs working for $15 an hour, you know? It's really tough to compete domestically with these guys that, like, to be honest with you, I guarantee you that there are a lot of great academic institutions in India, but there are a number of shady ones as well. And we don't check your diploma, you know? So right now, it's pretty easy. If you have money, you can come be an American citizen next week. Not next week, literally, but if you have money, the process is simple. If you don't have any money, the process is long, arduous, and painful. I really can't stress enough that if we want to steer away from all this illegal immigration, we need to provide a realistically attainable pathway for people to pursue, to stem the flow, you know? Because if it seems impossible, like, you know, my wife and I make this joke all the time. If something costs $10,000, it might as well cost $10 million to us, right? We can't afford it either way. If someone has a legitimately approachable pathway to becoming a citizen, we'll see more people try to do it the legitimate way. But right now, if it's going to cost $10,000 and you're homeless, if you need an attorney, if you need to go through this huge and elaborate process to become a U.S. citizen that could take years, you don't have the means as a dirt farmer in Mexico to even try to do it the right way. There's no incentive to try to do it the right way. It's either climb the fence or don't. You know, so I vote for President McNamara on this. I agree with you. I would ask that as a part of that McNamara Act, we find a way to streamline the citizenship process so that we can get good American citizen immigrants that it's not just that they had enough money when they got here. Right. It's that they have something to offer to this country. It's a tough situation to manage. It's a tough thing to do. But that's one thing I'd really like to see change in our immigration process is my Marines that joined the Marine Corps to serve the United States as citizens of other countries still end up spending thousands of dollars in attorney fees and stuff to get their citizenship. I think that's unsafe.
It's wrong. You know? It's wrong as wrong can be. And it's a whole industry devoted to that kind of stuff. All right.
It is, man. It's predatory in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. Tell, what are you writing this week and tell everybody where to find yourself.
I've got a couple of pretty interesting stories that should be coming out here in the near future, one of which being China just announced that they have a laser assault rifle that they're going to start deploying that, according to them, has got an 800-meter range, can burn a hole right through your clothes and set you on fire in 2 seconds or less, has a battery capacity that will do 1,000 rounds. I personally think it's a whole lot of horseshit, but, you know, China's really good about claiming these things. They're not quite... As epic as Russia when it comes to bullshittery, you know, but it's fun to read the stuff that they've got coming out. And speaking of that, I have another good story about Russia jumping into the fifth generation fighter arena, claiming that they're going to have 12 of their new Su-57s fielded by next year. I don't think that's possible, but even if it is, I don't give a shit. It doesn't matter. Your planes are bad. You should feel bad. But it's fun to watch them play the game. If you're interested in propaganda or narrative management, there'll be a couple good stories with my name on it coming out this week.
Nice, nice. All right, tell everybody where they find you.
Find me on southrup.com, or you can always find me on social media at facebook.com/AlexHollingsWriter. I took Mac's advice, changed the Old Man Fitness page. If you want Old Man Fitness, it's just at facebook.com/OMFAlex. Way better than the old one. And you can find me on Twitter at AlexHollings52. I'm on there all day. Feel free to hit me up.
All right. Hey, just I always enjoy the conversation, but today was awesome. Well done. Thank you.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me, man. Great talking to you.
No, Alex Hollings on a Monday. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.